Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Welcome along to the Build Up on Balls.ie, our podcast here in association with Ladbrokes. Myself, Mark Ferry, and Mick McCarthy, as always. And this week, Mick, spoiler alert, we may have recorded our interviews already, and we can promise you that we're going to get out of GAA chat. You're into GAA, you're into boxing. It's all GAA and boxing this week.
It's the only stuff we're talking about. Yeah, yeah. The magic of Zoom, we can, you know, put people... Yeah, we wouldn't have been able to do this in studio now, Mark. We didn't have the technology to kind of record this out of sequence. But, you know, letting people in behind the curtain. So they're already in our houses. They may as well come behind the curtain as well, you know.
They're behind the curtain in every way, Zoom.
Nice to talk a bit of GAA, because I'm absolutely convinced that there is no going to be no GAA this year of any kind. For the rest of 2020, there's levels of how much that's going to be true or not, like, but whether there's going to be club or there's going to be behind the scenes county, or I'm kind of convinced that we're not going to have any. So I have to say, I've just really enjoyed some reminiscing and some thinking about it a little bit, because getting to that stage now, even though we would have been in the middle of mythical club month, I'm just getting to the stage now where I'm just really missing, really, really missing a bit of GAA.
Yeah, exactly. We talked this week. We were talking to Jason Quigley and Kevin Doyle, Ladbrokes ambassadors, about their favourite Irish sporting occasions, which is why we're hinting at the fact that GAA come up with a good Wexford and Donegal men. They have a couple of memories. They have a couple of memories of success. Unlike some of us on this podcast, we don't have too many memories of it. But I would say all of Sunday morning, rewatching the Ulster final of 1997, which the GAA put up last week,
and it was that's the way to do it.
Exactly, it was great times. I had transported myself back. Said, what was it now? 23 years. Christ almighty. But anyway, the lads will be chatting to them about it. And then we'll also be playing our new GAA quiz. So we've had a team quiz every week. It's still going to be themed this week, but it's a bit different because, Mick, you were just trouncing PJ every week. Anyone who's regular listening to the podcast will know that you know way more about GAA than PJ does. And that was never going to...
I'm not endorsing that.
It was more a dig at you rather than him. But this week you're joining together to try and win the 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship Trivia Quiz. So all the questions are going to be related to the 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship. They're going to start out in the first round of the Provincial Championships and try and build their way to the All-Ireland Finals. And if you get knocked out along the way, well, that's your own fault and you don't win it.
But warning on that. I could have looked up the Wikipedia page of it, but sure, there you go.
There you go.
Would have ruined it, I suppose.
Exactly. You can subscribe to the podcast by searching the Build Up on Balls.ie and all good podcast apps. Please do be sure to do so, and also leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you're a subscriber already. But aside from that, make sure we get on the show.
So let's do it, Mark.
Let's do it. Let's jump right into our chat with Jason Quigley and Kevin Doyle. Delighted to be joined by Jason Quigley and Kevin Doyle on the line now. They're going to talk us through some of their favourite sporting memories. But first thing first, lads, Jason, talk us through your COVID-19 haircut.
I'm telling you, lads, it's all going in my head and every way. So it is. Good job you can't see the back of it.
Well, I'm very tempted to do the same thing myself. Soon enough, it's getting too warm for this hair. But we're talking about our favourite sport memories today, and you have a couple, Jason. We're going to start off obviously with it's the 2004 Olympics. This was kind of back. You were the hipster boxing fan before it was cool at the Olympics to be into boxing, where we had just Andy Lee was the only representative for us that year, but he was the first name on your list.
Yeah, it was the 2004 Athens Olympic Games. I think they were very special in the sense that the Olympics started in Athens. It was coming back to Athens. Everything like that there. It was a special Olympics in itself. And I was only 13 years of age. I had won the three national championships that I've entered. I was two-time Four Nations gold medalist. And I was just a young kid doing really well in amateur boxing. And Andy Lee was the guy that you were looking up to in amateur boxing. He was the one that was leading the way, leading the path for the likes of myself and every other young amateur boxer coming through. And kind of before Andy, the Olympics was very quiet on the amateur scene. And, you know, there was nothing really happening about it. And Andy broke that mold again, brought it back to brought Ireland back into the Olympics, and you know, he brought the buzz and he brought the excitement back. And I can remember sitting up watching Andy and thinking, like, this is something special. Like, this is something that I wanted to do. Andy was giving me goals and dreams of my own when I was 13 years of age.
Yeah, he lost the second round to Hassan and Nadam, and it was a thriller, with a countback defeat. But like, you think about it, like, that was a stacked tournament that year as well. You had Golovkin in it on the other side of the draw too. And I was thinking about it, like, in isolation, you have the event itself and the memories of Lee and Clive Forrester, he didn't get a medal or whatever. But then when you look to 4 years later, it just shows you how much of an influence Lee had on all boxer, amateur boxers. As we were saying, you looked up to him. I'm sure all the boxers in 2008 then as well, they were all looking at the same 4 years previous, going, geez, this is, you know, this is something that we can really achieve.
Yeah, I think one trend that didn't take off was Billy Walsh's white vest and the moustache in the corner again.
I know it was the moustache, all right.
And then Angulo fight. Andy's first fight was against Alfredo Angulo, who went on to box Canelo and everything in the amateur, or in the best game, you know, and just watching Billy Walsh walking behind Andy to the ring with a white vest on him and the big black tash on him, it was it was comical looking back on it. But I have to say, like, you know, Andy got into the ring on his first fight, you could see what it meant to him, like the smile on his face getting into his first fight in the Olympic Games and putting in a great performance against Angulo, who was a tough operator. You know, he didn't really come to box, he came to fight, and he put Andy under serious pressure. Andy came through that fight lovely, and it set himself up lovely for his next fight against Ndam, who I just watched back those fights this morning again, so I did. And Dam was a nightmare to fight. He was just, like, he was so unpredictable. He was throwing shots from every angle. You saw the likes of, you saw Andy, who was an absolute idol for any amateur boxer. His style, his stance, the computer scoring, everything like that. He was just perfect for it, because the big long arms and the shots, like, the judges could see the scores so easy. But Ndam was coming from every angle. Like, he was throwing shots out of the blue. He was hitting Andy with slaps. He was hitting him in the back of the head. He was hitting him with absolutely everything he could. And, you know, it was a tough, tough, grueling fight. And Andy sneaked back to a draw just before the end of the fight. And he lost it on a comeback decision, which is always gut-wrenching, you know, to finish the fight in a draw and then get it taken away in you, because at that moment you're sitting in the ring and nobody knows who won. Everyone's sitting there, the judges in the top table are counting back through all the scores, so the both boxers are sitting there knowing that they might win it, they might not win it, and it's one of those most anticipated moments in boxing whenever the computer scoring was going. But it was definitely a breakthrough for Irish amateur boxing at the time, with Andy getting to the Olympic Games, being the only Irish boxer. And I think that year as well, Great Britain only had Amir Khan at the Olympic Games. You know, it was an intense Olympic game, so it was for Great Britain and Ireland. But Andy definitely led the way, and as you can see, the benefits that Irish amateur boxing got after that was unbelievable. Like, they just flourished after that, and it was just Olympic Games after Olympic Games, medals after medals, and you know, we have to thank the Irish amateur boxing team for that, and of course Andy Lee.
You've been to so many of those kind of like tournaments or whatever where you go as a team, and there's a lot of you there, and I know Andy talked about it a little bit in his book, and he's probably talked to you about it as well, but like, being there as the only member of that team, you know, from your experience, how much would that make things more difficult for him? Like, it's a long period.
Yes, it's definitely a long period, because like, boxing isn't known as a team sport, but in the amateur game it kind of is a team sport, but we've got that friendly competition as well. Like, in training camps every day we're going into sparring, like, you're in training camps in the middle of Russia or wherever it is, and you're sparring with all the number ones in each country, and maybe the number twos if it's the host country. And, you know, every day you're getting in and we're all watching each other, like in the training camps, we're all seeing if one boy got battered today or he did the batter in the next day. You know, and there was a great camaraderie there, I think, with the Irish boxing team. And I can remember, like, the banter was just unbelievable. Like, you go on one day and if you're penciled down to spar the number one Russian, everyone's taking their hand at you, like, just taking the piss, you know, you're going to get your ass kicked today or whatever. Like, you know, there was a great buzz and there was a great atmosphere about that. And for Andy, that, I'm sure he would have been missing that massively. Like, you know, just having other boxers there with him going through the same procedure, just having somebody else going through the exact same thing that Andy was going through throughout training camp, throughout the Olympic Games. There's two ways you could look at it. You could look at it in the terms of the friendly competition that I always seen an Irish team was, you always wanted to do better. Like, you always wanted to be the main man coming home. You always wanted to be the gold medalist. There was somebody got a bronze. You wanted to get the silver. You know, you wanted to do that anyway, but you even wanted it more so that you could flag your teammates off on the plane back home. So you had that kind of friendly competitiveness that drove you on, that made you go that extra mile in training and everything as well. But you also had the thing that there was no pressure on Andy. He was the main man then. You know, he was the only Irish boxer to make it to the Athens Olympic Games. And there was no pressure. All he had to do was go in there and enjoy it and give it his all, which I, from what I've seen, you know, that he really did do that in both his fights. But it depends on the type of personality, I suppose, of the fighter, of the boxer, to see what environment he likes to relish in. Does he like to relish in the friendly competition, or does he like to be the main man standing and just lapping it all up and going in there full of confidence? But it definitely would have been difficult in any situation not to have teammates there, like, you know what I mean, not to have lads there that you can have a laugh with as well.
Sure. Kevin, did you have many dealings with Billy Walsh and his dodgy vest over the years, one of the other great Wexford sports people?
Yeah, I did plenty. And he got a video of him yesterday, actually, of him. I'm in a WhatsApp group with Billy and a few friends from Colorado. We live just down the road from each other in Colorado, so I'm obviously from Wexford. So he struggles. I don't know if you've seen him trying to drink a pint. He struggles to drink a pint. He took about four goals to get. It was one of these videos that around. He had to drink a pint and wish each other well or something. And it took Billy about 5 minutes to get this pint down. I got on very well with him. And we used to meet up a good bit in America. You know, we met up more in America than we did in Wexford. He was home at Christmas and I didn't see him. But, lovely fella, Billy. And really successful and really he's loved as well in America. He's after extending his contract out there, I think, and he's enjoying life.
Speaking of Wexford, Kevin, there's no prizes for guessing what you've gone for a jersey or favourite sport in memory, the 96 All-Ireland win.
Yeah, I did. I was going to pick the 1990 World Cup, and, you know, I talk about something other than soccer or football here. Talk about the All-Ireland final. It was 2 days, I think, or a day or two, whatever, before I started secondary school. I don't remember. Wow. I didn't think it was going to be the last time they won the hurling final. Or you know, they did a really good, fairly youngish team, I suppose. Good mix then. You thought they were going to go on and win a few more after that. But in my head, anyway, it was a lovely sunny day. I was in Hill 16 and, you know, the country was, or the county was buzzing for it. It felt like the country as well. Like the Dancing at the Crossroads song was number one. If you remember, I think 2FM banned it from being in the bay. You requested so much. I know that song word for word as well. And squad, the players, word for word, every name in it. I'm not going to do it for you now. I a few points on you. I think half of Wexford knows that song word for word as well. But yeah, fantastic, just fantastic time. It was I was in Hill 16 and it was, we were stopping us getting onto the pitch when they won, and a steward looked at me. I was only 10 or whatever it was, 12 going to secondary school. I was getting squashed up against the fence. Everyone was trying to climb the fence and he just opened a little gate and let me on. So I was the first one on the pitch. You look back at highlights of it and see people running on the pitch. I'm one of the first ones, or the first one from Hill 16 anyway, onto the pitch. And I got a lump of grass when I was out on the pitch and putting that still up a jar in a jar at home, this lumbergrass from that beat Limerick. I think it was something like 113 to 14 points or something like that. Tom Dempsey scored a goal. He's my next door neighbour here, and he's married to my first cousin. A legend, Tom is, and great. All those players all those players are just legends in Wexford. Larry O'Gorman, Matt Story, you know, all of them. And they're all like, they're the last ones to have won in all Ireland. No one has come and taken that from them in Wexford. So they're all legends going around, and rightly so. And, they were superstars back then. And every young lad wanted to beat them. I wasn't a great hurler. I was so into soccer. But, to me, they were superstars. That is my main memory of sport as a kid. Going to Crow Park, we went to nearly all the matches leading up to that. It's the final and semi-final. So, fantastic time for every Wexford person. We're still hanging on to it. I'm still talking about it.
So the same as Gavin, not the 40s and 50s, at least it's the 90s you have. Because I was going to say, it's amazing when that when it's sweet. Like, the GA is brilliant. Like, it just sweeps the community in the same way. Jason, you want to talk about Donegal, obviously, as well. That was an incredible journey those couple of years. Like, for me, I have a gripe with a lot of people who will talk about the blanket defence and all this, Donegal and defensive football. Because the year they won the All Ireland, they were electric to watch the whole way through.
Yeah, they were. Like, I think the reason why it was so massive, obviously, because 92 was the last time we won it, and it was the run of form that Donegal had for about 4 or 5 years previous to the 2011 running. And, you know, like, they were shocking. Like, they were getting hammered by anybody and everybody. They hadn't won a championship game in, I think, like, 4 years or something. And as soon as Jim McGuinness came in and took over, like, the belief that he instilled in them, probably nobody ever thought that you could get these bunch of lads to listen to anybody. And I think that's the reason why this success, it was a massive achievement regardless, but because of where Donegal came from before this success, I think it made it even more special. And the way that Jim McGuinness went about things, very unorthodox, then, you know, brought a massive, completely different approach to anybody ever kind of seen in the GAA. And done it to a team that everybody thought was easy pickings. And, you know, from 2011, the ball just kept rolling and the lads just thrived on it. And the confidence build with them massively every single game. And I think what was so great about it was what Jim told them, everything started to happen. And it was with time that the belief started coming. They were like, this lad's not just off his head here. He's actually talking sense. What he said has happened. And, you know, it was just something so special from the time that Jim took over, like, to the time that he left. It was an amazing run. And I remember being out at the European Championships at the time. This was 2013. And I was wearing the Donegal jersey and everything like this here. And Billy Walsh was there as well. And Billy was like, I never seen you wear the Donegal jersey for a year. He says, where's all this coming from now? And I think it was just Billy Walsh craving an All-Ireland for his own county that the jealousy got a bit over the better of him at that stage. But, you know, we had great banter on it, and like, Donegal really did lift every Donegal athlete. I think, you know, the buzz, like the famous words, success, great success, and, you know, everybody was thriving off it. Like, I felt on a buzz, just let alone from Donegal doing so well, and the county being on such a high, it really had a massive effect throughout the whole county. Like, it was some buzz at the time, now, definitely.
Speaking of Ireland winning sounds, can you still remember the words of Jimmy's winning matches?
Oh, 100%. I'm not thinking it either.
We'll need a forfeit or something like that, but by the end of this series, they get one of you to sing one of those songs. It's,
I'm going ahead there.
No, go ahead.
I'm very good friends with Rory Gallagher, the lad that sang the song. And I think it was for my 27th birthday there. Your friend April, she had arranged that Rory came to the house and, you know, played a few tunes and everything like that. But me and the lads were all away paintballing and everything like that throughout the day. And I came back to the house and all the lads, like, were all saying, oh, come on, we'll go go-karting now. And we were just finished paintballing. We were mucky, dirty. We were wrecked, tired. And I was thinking, well, what is wrong with all these lads? Like, why do they want to go go-karting so much? And I was like, Donegal, everybody thinks we're petrol heads. And I was like, Jesus, they must be all very petrol heads. And they were mad to go go-karting. So we went go-karting. And I couldn't figure this out. I thought it's so strange, like, why they all... Next thing, landed back to the house and walked into the sit room. And there was Rory banging out Jimmy's woman matches.
That's class. I was just thinking, Kevin, while we were talking like there about kind of both of those stories, the difference, I think this probably applies to Ireland internationally as well. The being from a county like Wexford, you haven't won it in however long it is, coming up 24 years or whatever. 34 years. 24.
Jesus. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not as old as I thought I was there for a second. Or like, you know, but winning in 2012, Jason, like, you know, 20 years and never won it before. There is something almost more special. Like, I know it's kind of, oh, I wish we won every year. I wish we, you know, broke that duck. I wish we weren't waiting 24 years. But there is something just more memorable almost when you're from a county like that. Or even, again, internationally, you talked about Italian 90 earlier. You know what I mean? There's that. It does lift the country more because we're not expecting it. It just happens. Yeah. You know,
it's like if you get unexpected success, or you know, you just love it more. You enjoy the moment more. I think you realize it doesn't come around that often. So you try to appreciate as much as you can. Wexford at that time, I don't think they'd won since the '60s. So you know, everyone, that's why the place was buzzing. So same with Ireland. If we do well, we know it's not in every week. Like with Dublin footballers, I'm sure for their fans now it's great and everything, but I can't imagine they enjoy the fifth. Is it going for the fifth now? Or they've had five?
Had five.
I can't imagine they enjoy this one now as much as they did the first one. Maybe they'll say they do. But you know, when you haven't had it in so long and you get success in sport as an individual soccer player, and you have a good season, or when you haven't had one in a few years, I felt like you enjoy it more. It means more to you. You realize it's not like that every year. There's more, a lot more downs and ups in sports. So try and, you know, you cherish it. Your memories are still there, like from 96 now. But I'd say those lads in 96 are sort of half sneakily enjoying the fact, like the likes of Lee Chin or whatever in Wexford now haven't gone on one in Ireland, because they'd be totally forgotten about. You never speak about them again. It'd be the new generation. So because all those lads are still held as legend, and rightly so, in Wexford, and they will be till someone comes along and takes their place.
Yeah, like those Miami Dolphins lads who meet up to every time somebody gets defeated in the NFL. But like, what about last year though? Because I was like, you know, watching the Leinster final on telly, and I was kind of sick of that I wasn't there even as a neutral, because it just seemed like that colour, that, you know, yellow and purple was back again in the hurling's picture, I suppose. And it's so close to the semi-final. They're not that far off.
No, they weren't. And I think Wexford is sort of like a lot of people's second team. They seem to get a lot of goodwill from around the country. We keep going with so much enthusiasm and spirit every year. Don't get knocked down. Like this, I was at the semi-final, jumped on the bandwagon for the semi-final, and we were six or seven points up with 25 minutes to go, and a man up as well. So it looked like we were going to an All-Ireland final. And maybe that, you know, I don't know, psychologically or something, it hit the lad, oh, Jesus, this is our chance again. So, but yeah, we've got David Fitz has done a fantastic job in Wexford for recreating a real buzz. Even in Wexford Park for league games, it's pretty much full. And like, kids, like young kids running on the pitch after the game, getting autographs. You know, they're like, they're suit, the hurlers. He's made the hurlers in Wexford. It made it cool again, made it for young players. My 7-year-old knows the names of a lot of the hurlers, wants to be a hurler. You know, he doesn't understand when I tell him, like, there's no money in hurling. And he's like, why not that? They'll pay me. They'll pay me when I'm old enough to get paid.
He's probably right.
Maybe they will, but I'm joking with Massey. He loves it. I love the fact he loves going to Ireland. I'm in a big hurling community where I live. So, but yeah, to see 7-year-olds, Lee Chin or whatever to him is as big as Ronaldo is to lads. So no, it is. You can really see, you know, singing Davy Fitz's praise as well. He mightn't win an All Ireland with Wexford, but the young lads he's got, enthusiastic, the 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 14-year-olds that are all wanting to play hurling now, you know, we'll see the benefit for the next 10 or 15 years of Wexford because of the bit of razzmatazz and enthusiasm he's brought to it now, even if he doesn't get him to an All-Ireland final.
Definitely.
When you were at the likes of Reading, would you have brought any hurling, brought the gospel of hurling to any of the players, yourself and Shane and the Hunts?
Longie was there as well, and Hunty was a good hurler. So yeah, we did get the hurlers. I remember showing the lads one time. I remember going into when we were first playing at Croke Park with Ireland. My cousin was playing an All Ireland Mogie final with Wexford as well around the same time. So there's a picture of me somewhere walking around Croke Park with a hurl, me and her together, just before we played our game. So there was a bit about it, a bit of hurling, and showing the English lads it, showing them videos. They're always, you know, like anything, they're always interested to see it, but. Yeah, it was more for there'd always be a paper reporter wanting us to take a picture of us with a hurlers or whatever, showing the lads for a bit of practice. But yeah, that was it. Didn't bring him. Remember Wexford playing Tipperary around the time, me and Longie go to the local Irish bar and go in and watch it and stuff like that. Be a bit of crack between us all. John O'Shea as well with Waterford. A bit of a banter, a bit of wind up. If we're home with Ireland, we try to get to it. To a game if it was on Croke Park, get out of a hotel and get to a game. So, well, yeah, all the lads who would be from Ireland and know would be ribbing each other and winding each other up. And I didn't have a whole lot, to be honest, to be winding that up about. we had more football, actually. Matty Ford was flying when I first went to Reading. Matty Ford is a legend, and everyone knew Matty Ford and still does. Absolute unbelievable footballer. So I had that to boast about to the lads.
Good stuff, lads. Thanks very much. That was great stuff.
No worries, lads.
Brilliant stuff there from the lads. Mick, what's your favourite sporting occasion, Irish sporting occasion?
I thought about this now. And still have no answer. So.
I was going to say, it's not like we were just discussing this off-air.
Winning the All-Ireland in 2013, the replay for Clare against Cork was probably one of the happiest occasions I've been. But there's, I don't know, it's a very weird thing. Like, I mean, the happiest I remember being in a stadium was Clare beating Tip in Thurles a couple of years ago in the championship, you know, knocking them out and getting through out of the group stage. And I know that's weird, but when they've won 3 All-Irelands in my lifetime, but I don't know, Munster winning the Heineken Cup in 2006 definitely jumps out for me with Anthony Foley as captain and watching that in Australia. I watched 94 Italy and Ireland the other day in its entirety, and it has happy memories for me. I've no bloody answer for you, Mark. I've been too cavalier with the criteria here, I think. I have a few.
Yeah,
Katie Taylor winning in 2012 in the final, sorry. Well,
yeah, another one. So we talk about occasions as well. I remember 97 probably would be my knee-jerk reaction when Cavan beat Derry in the Ulster final, but I remember so little of it. I was only a child. Like, I remember snippets. I remember bits and bobs and some of the celebrations coming home. But the fact that I do actually remember snippets of it, I don't remember anything else that happened in the 2 or 3 years previous or after it, might mean, you know, that it really did stick out as an occasion. I suppose the other one was being at the Euros for Ireland Sweden was nuts. Wes. That was brilliant. Yeah. Oh, going into that stadium, man. Just the buzz when you're walking up. It's like, it's nothing, you don't really get it with GAA if you're going to Croke Park just because it's a bit quieter before the game starts. There's there's not the same chanting or whatever. When you're walking up the steps and it's just this, you can hear this wall of noise and you don't know what you're going to see when you're going into a game like that. And then you just walk through, you see the pitch and the Ireland team are walking out for the national anthem. This is incredible. Ireland, France, I remember being in college and none of us had any hope going into that second leg in Paris of beating France. And, you know, it was, I think the whole country was the exact same. I remember we went in to play a game of five-a-side, first off, and everyone started blaring, putting under pressure in the car on the way in. And then you're like, geez, you know, we could do this. And
this is in 2010, or the 2010 qualifier. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
They go into the SU and it was absolutely thronged and everybody was just chanting and roaring and we got the goal. And I was like, this is the greatest 2 hours of my life. Yeah. And then it all just fell apart. But far
it did.
Up until that Henri handball, it was incredible. Like, Nick never experienced anything like that.
We went 1-0 up again, like in terms of, again, occasion. Like, occasion doesn't always need to be what happened afterwards or whatever. And, you know, Jay talks about 2011 as much as 2012 when it comes to Donegal. But, like, there was, like, the Ireland leading against France at halftime in France in the 2016 European Championships. Like, there was a sense of everybody getting together. I remember Dublin was, like, I'm sure France, the people who were over there experienced it differently. But for us in Dublin, it was like everybody was just out in the streets. It was a really sunny day. Everybody was out to watch this match and everything was built. I'd never remember something being built up to as much. And then we went out and scored after 2 minutes. And it just felt even bigger, you know. And then Griezmann obviously ruined it. And I don't remember it all that well. It's like it's been kind of, like, wiped my memory a little bit because it was disappointing for the last 20-30 minutes. It wasn't like really a contest until the last second or anything, but I think as an occasion goes, that's pretty big as well, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And it was one that came from no hope to, like, we absolutely played them off the park. We were dominating that game
for the first half. Yeah,
yeah. And even like Duff had a chance as well to score off.
Oh, you're talking about 2010, sorry, I mean in 2016 when I'm saying, like, to be leading that game after the early penalty, like, was just bizarre, you know. And, well, no, 2010, that was a different occasion. That wasn't as big an occasion in terms of the build up, as you said. It kind of, you accidentally fell into believing, but the 120 minutes were as big as you get. Like,
definitely. Yeah, the 16 one, to go in front, that was just nuts. Especially when I'd thought France were going to win it the whole way through, like, win out the tournament. So, and you were like, geez, actually here, we could win this. There was another one I remember that just in that tournament was when we went down to Bordeaux before the Belgium game and been in a, going into some pub. And you're only like, you're one of them where you're kind of like, you've been there for a week at this stage and you're already tired or whatever. And I remember putting up my Snapchat story. We were watching Italy were playing Sweden and we were watching the game and it came to half time or whatever. And it was like, I think it was 5:03 p.m. say over there. And the pub we were in, a little tiny pub that, like, was one of those that everybody could buy drinking, just probably stand outside, you know, there weren't too many people in it. And they put on Free From Desire. And the place just went nuts. And everybody's up on people's shoulders going, Shane Long's on fire, whatever. And then it happened again at the end of the game, exactly an hour to the minute, because I had, again, the time of the time stamp. So it was like 5:03, 6:03 p.m. And it was just this place going nuts to Shane Long's on fire, which was another... Not really an occasion, and it wasn't an actual
not
match,
an Irish sporting just... occasion so much as a thing that happened in your life that was dead.
But, you know. But it was everybody else, all the fans over there experienced the exact same. It was like the occasion isn't just the game itself, and it's not even just the match day, it's just the whole experience.
Definitely. It's the whole, it's the routine, it's the tribalism, it's everything that goes along with it, you know, is what I think creates the occasion. And that's why I think there is a sort of a, you know, the GAA does have a kind of a special place in a lot of those, even though they're not as national as these memories, because they're only for the individual counties. But, you know, I think it's the thing that we're, I for me anyway, there's something about the kind of the ritual of the day in Croke Park and where you meet people beforehand and where you meet them after and where you walk up whichever road you might go up, like Clonliffe Road or something like that, that is kind of something so, so special, almost because of its familiarity as well, you know.
Definitely, 100%.
We've waffled on enough now on this.
We have. Well, look, we're getting caught down trips down memory world, and that's
we miss sports so much.
Exactly. So we have.
Remember, we used to go to Croke Park, Mark.
I'm going to bring back sport in a different form right now, because we're going to play again the 2007 All Ireland Football Championship. We're going to play it in quiz form. Mick and PJ Brown are about to come on the line. They're going to try and win the 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship by answering questions correctly about the 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship. So let's do it. PJ Brown joins us in studio now. He's with Mick McCarthy for a new GEA quiz that we're trying. So last week, lads, we've been doing a themed quiz, and I'm changing it up a bit, right? The last couple of weeks we've gone with that. This week it's a little bit different. You're going to try and win. The All-Ireland Championships have been postponed, obviously, so we're trying to fill that void. So the two of you are going to come together to try and win the All-Ireland Championship in quiz format. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No.
No.
I know I was undefeated at the old quiz.
Forget about the old quiz. The old quiz is yesterday's. This is, we're having a quiz. We've had a special congress for quiz restructuring here, right? You're going to both be on the same team together. And I'm going to put this into a random GEA championship from years gone by. And you're going to try and win it. You're going to start off in the first round of the provincial championships. And for every question you get right, you move through the rounds to eventually hopefully get to the All-Ireland final. The two of you are going to work together and try and win this championship. And this week, we're going to play the 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship quiz.
Wow.
Are you excited?
So there's qualifiers if we get knocked out.
There's possible qualifiers. There's a slight difference in the way this works in that you play one qualifier match and it brings you back in at the exact same round you would have gotten there if you'd gotten the question before, right?
Okay.
So you can get back into the provincial championship forever. But hopefully we won't need any of that. We'll have to explain that in detail. But if we do, we'll get to that when we have to. But we're going to start off, lads, in the first round of the Leinster Championship now. You can compare, you can discuss your possible answers for all of these and then come to a final decision. It's up to you. So the first question number one, Wicklow versus Loud went to two replays before Loud eventually ran out winners in their first round Leinster Championship clash in 2007. Who was the Wicklow manager at the time?
2007.
Yes.
Wicklow manager. Jesus, that's a hard one. Like, I'm trying to think of any Wicklow manager ever. John Evans wasn't him. It wasn't Johnny McGee. He was
there are the two Wicklow managers I can think of.
Yeah, John O'Leary, I think, was Wicklow manager for a while. Surely he wasn't at that stage. He would have been much earlier than that, I would think. God, do we know the person, Mark?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, is it Mick?
Oh, it's Mick O'Dwyer, yeah.
Is that your final answer?
The really famous Wicklow manager in the middle of all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I thought it was like, Jesus, this is a terrible quiz if it's going to fall around, if you're not even going to get through the preliminary round of the Leinster Championship. Yeah. But thankfully.
Look, we know how to create a bit of drama.
Exactly. So,
can you imagine people screaming, Mikko, you scumshites!
Mikko Dwyer, that was his, I think that was his first year in charge of the Mikko. We hadn't been in charge, obviously, with Wexford. I forgot that it was Wexford tenure, actually, up until I was writing this quiz. I was like, oh, Jesus, yeah. So Mikko against Paddy O'Shea and the Leinster. Or sorry, not Wexford, Leash tenure. Tenure up until our party and him against each other in the Leinster final a few years before that. But anyway, we move on to the Munster quarter final. This is this question number two, Munster quarter final. It saw Cork trounce Limerick 2-14 to 7 points, and a Cork forward that day scored 1-7 to start off a campaign that would see him finish as the championship's top scorer. Can you name that Cork forward?
Ooh.
First name that comes into my head, PJ, is James Masters, but
I don't know. Who would have been the other contenders around that time? Donegh O'Connor?
Was Donegh O'Connor there in 07, yeah.
Yeah,
it was kind of the in-between teams, wasn't it? Between the 2010 and the previous one. O'Connor
Goulding was probably only coming on the scene, I'd say.
O'Neill wasn't. He was young in 2010.
I'd go for Masters.
I have a feeling he had a big year, didn't he? One of those years, and they got to the final in 07, so maybe it was that. We'll go with Masters.
James Masters.
It's Donegh O'Connor.
He could have gone for Donegh O'Connor. He could have gone for, like, Colin Corkery, Goulding, perhaps. He's gone.
Colin Corkery.
For James Masters. I'm just naming random old Cork forwards. Because the correct answer is indeed James Masters. Congratulations, you're through to the provincial semi-final.
Great, good to see.
Well done, lads.
Which province are we randomly going to be in now that we're in the semi-final?
Well,
I love this.
You're going to the Ulster Championship semi-finals.
Ooh.
Two teams obviously won the semi-finals. I just want you to name one of them. But you're only allowed one guess. So if you get it wrong...
Name one of the finalists in Ulster that year, so.
Yeah, basically.
I'm almost
this
sure
is
that
a semi-final question, so we're going to say it's name a semi-final winner.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure Monaghan won. Were in the final that year.
Oh, are you? I'm pretty sure Fermanagh were in the final that year. Malachy O'Rourke's year that he got them to the final. I'm just thinking about where I was in a work sense and everything like that, and I'm pretty sure it was 07. Might have been 08. Why Monaghan? Because they play Kerry in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, Kerry in the quarterfinal.
Like, did Kerry win Munster, no?
Yeah. Kerry won Munster that year, yeah.
So therefore, Monaghan didn't. Monaghan were in the qualifiers. But,
no, I pretty think Monaghan lost the final.
This is tense stuff, lads. This is edge of the seat here.
Who was the other quarterfinals?
The other All-Ireland quarterfinals that year?
Yeah.
Tyrone lost to Meade. Tyrone and Meade. Which suggests that Tyrone were Ulster finalists.
Ulster champions, yeah. And if it was the Fermanagh year, I think Tyrone bet them. And if it was Monaghan, Tyrone, it's still a good chance. I don't know.
We go with neither of the teams you mentioned and go with Tyrone then.
Yeah, do you know what? It's probably the best thing to do. It'll,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Go Tyrone.
On. Tyrone, your final answer.
Yeah.
Well, lads, congratulations. You're through to the provincial finals. It was indeed Tyrone and it was Monaghan. Tyrone played Monaghan in the Ulster final. So there you go.
I think that was actually very good teamwork though.
That was very good. That was great. Great. This is what I want to see as well. It's very hard to remember these specific games. That's when I was trying to come up with questions. I was like, geez, this is difficult. But then I was thinking, you can actually, if you think of them in the larger context of the All-Ireland series, it's a bit easier.
So when did O'Rourke get Fermanagh into the Ulster final? That was 08 then, was it?
I think so. It was 08 the time they got to the semi-finals or the...
I remember there was a song that was, come on Fermanagh! And it was like, they have a brand new manager. His name is Malachy O'Rourke. That's all I kind of remember.
Well, look, they were in the Ulster final. We're not going to reveal the answer to that. And not because I can't remember when they were, but because this could potentially be a different year when you're playing to try and win a different All-Ireland Championship.
Yeah, very good point.
A different week. So you're in the final. You're in the provincial final. And this week's provincial final is the Leinster 2007 football final. Dublin beat Laois 3-14 to 1-14 in the thrilling final. The top scorer on each team had bleached hair. Name them.
Oh, that's Mark Vaughan.
Yeah, Mark Vaughan for sure. And
who?
I will clarify this. The lad, like Mark Vaughan, was very bleached hair. This lad was more kind of like frosted
highlights.
Highlights, you know, was top.
It was Ross Munley, wasn't it? No?
Possibly.
Or Beano? Well,
Michael J. Tierney?
Oh, it might have been MJ. Yeah. MJ would have had it. Would have loved the highlight.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not. This is purely, like, none of this is based on, like, oh, yeah, I remember that game. You had a really good game or score this much.
MJ always took frees as well. So he always took the frees. He was a great free taker. Definitely had highlights in his hair at one point in his life. I think that could be a good call. Do we have to get both, yeah? Mark Vaughan is obviously the right answer, yeah.
You have to put them. You have to present them both together to me.
The other options just on free takers for Laois, right, would be Ross Munley and like Donny Kingston was hardly around that stage. He would have only been 16 or 17. So you'd have to think it was MJ. MJ Tierney.
Yeah, go MJ.
I can reveal that in the Leinster final, out of Dublin's 3-14. A young player by the name of Mark Vaughan scored 1-6, and at Alicia's 1-14, MJ Tierney scored 7 points. Congratulations, you have won the Leinster Championship in quiz form.
Leinster Champions, PJ.
Oh, yes. It's the championship I always dreamed of winning as a Gary man.
The 2007 Leinster Quiz Champions, meaning you move on to the All Ireland quarterfinals, and you've mentioned this game already. I'm going to give you two possible options here because I think it was a hard one, but maybe this is too easy. But anyway, okay, we play it by ear. In the All-Ireland quarterfinals, Kerry and Monaghan play out an absolute thriller in Croke Park. So you've got two options here. You can either tell me the winning margin of the game and who won, obviously, or tell me which player did not score a goal that day. Was it A, Declan O'Sullivan, B, Tommy Freeman, or C, Mike Frank Russell?
I'll defer to you on this one.
I was at that game. It was an All-Ireland, it was a double header with the hurling semi final between Waterford and Limerick. Yeah.
I was at that game. As well, PJ. Jesus, we would pass each other like ships in the night.
And I was down at the end, I was down at the Canal End when Kerry got the winning point, and they won by a point. Tomás O'Shea scored it.
He's very confident here, Mick. Have you had any reason to doubt him?
I was sure it was a point, but I didn't want to. You never know when you could be wrong about something like that. It could have been a goal that made it won it by two or whatever. But I remember the score. I remember it going over the bar.
Yeah, I'd be more sure of the winning margin than I would be of who didn't score a goal there. Yeah.
I can reveal that Kerry did indeed beat Monaghan by a point. It was 112-111. It was a hell of a game. Monaghan, I think, were leading that for an awful long time.
And they had won.
Kerry came back at the end, yeah. And then
Kerry were terrible either.
Didn't they play the following year as well?
That's the game. The 07 game is the game that Malachy Clerkin, the Irish Times GA writer, talks about as being the defining moment of his fandom, where he just went outside to the back of Croke Park and just stood there for like an hour, not really doing anything or staring into the ether, and like paralysed by disappointment. And I just thought, nothing has ever summed up what it means to be a GAA fan, I think, more than that story, you know. And yeah, it's like, definitely. We're talking about it earlier in the show, when you only have success every now and then, it's better, but it does make the failure all that more hard to deal with. Like, we've all, look, everyone except PJ has dealt with it.
Yeah, exactly. And even the game after, remember, that was, I think, probably the first hurling game I think I was at, and it was Waterford Limerick, two teams that are, again, that have gone through a lot of heartbreak and stress, and it was like, geez, this is nuts, because we were in the middle of just Waterford and Limerick hurling fans. There weren't too many Kerry and Monaghan fans around, and it was just madness. It was, the passion was unbelievable. There were two great games, but that, anyway, we're getting distracted here, because the more important thing here is that you 2E are now through to the 2007 All-Ireland Quiz semi-final. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes,
you're two questions away from lifting the Sam McTrivia Cup. All you need to do get these two questions right, and you're through.
Would we be the inaugural winners of the Sam McTrivia Cup?
You would be. I can confirm now, though, that the qualifier route is out the window. It was actually out the window in the last round as well. But should you get this wrong, your journey to the All-Ireland final will just stop now. So question number six, which is the All-Ireland semi-finals. Only four players scored for Meath in their 116-09 defeat to Cork. Name two of them.
Ooh.
So they scored nine points, four of them scored. Okay.
What was their forward line that year?
Geraghty came off the bench to score against Tyrone in the quarter, but I wouldn't be sure that he definitely scored against Cork. So you're thinking, like,
how many do we have to name?
Brian Farrell? Like,
would two of the four.
Who would have taken?
Four people, four people scored. You need to name two.
Shane O'Rourke, Stephen Bray.
Stephen Bray won, I think he won an All-Star that year.
Hard to see Stephen Bray not scoring in a game, like.
Yeah.
Who was on freeze? Would it have been, was Shane O'Rourke would have been playing in 07, wouldn't he?
Probably.
I wouldn't be sure of it.
I definitely go with Stephen Bray anyway. As one answer. And after that, was Keane Ward around back then?
Oh, he was, for sure. Yeah. Keane Ward would have been kicking freeze. Keane Ward is the answer. Right, great call. Keane Ward and Stephen Bray.
Is that your final answer? Going for Keane Ward, Stephen Bray, no comebacks.
You're a good quiz master. I know you've been watching that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show. You know how to make us doubt ourselves.
You need some dramatic music here as well, Mark, and some lights.
I hope it's the only thing you take after Chris Tarrant.
So, lads,
Yeah.
I'm going to guess the other two just for the laugh, right? Is Brian Farrell and Shane O'Rourke. But we'll go with Ward and Bray as our answers.
So the question again was, the Cork beat Meath 116-9 points in the All-Ireland, 2007 All-Ireland semi-final. Meath only had four scorers that day. You've gone, Keane Ward, and Stephen Bray. That's the wrong answer.
Oh,
no. Bowed out at the All-Ireland semi-final stage. And you know what's even more frustrating? The four scorers that day, King, Bray, Shane O'Rourke, and Brian Farrell.
Ah, the other two I said.
You saved three of the four. He's actually
who was the
three
first
of the four.
One?
King, I can't remember his first name. Was it Queeving King?
Oh, Brian Farrell. He was the first person I thought of. He just the forward in that era. Bray and who was the other one?
Shane O'Rourke.
O'Rourke.
But the other two we said.
So you said
you can't
two.
Say fairer than that, though. We gave it a good go, like.
All Ireland semi final.
Great run. Yeah, All Ireland semi final in our first All Ireland Championship quiz.
And we were this close. We were closer to Monaghan against Kerry.
Yeah. Great run. I'm trying to find the first was Peeping King, who was scored the other point. And
I feel like we were closer to Mead were that year as well.
Yeah, Farrell scored four, Bray and O'Rourke scored two each, and King scored a point.
If we were to have got to the All Ireland final, Mark,
what would we have question won? It?
Would we have
well,
won?
I think he's could have. It depends how good Peter's memory is, because Kerry obviously it's not like me and you, Mick, where like you know you could ask me name the 1997 Ulster Championship winning team for Cavan. I'd name them for head to toe. You the same with Clare. Whereas this, you know, All Ireland's come so thick and fast to Kerry that he maybe mixes up a couple of years. But the All Ireland final question would have been: Kerry easily beat their rivals Cork in the All Ireland final. Name the six starting forwards for Kerry that day in any order.
Oof.
But you can only name six players.
Gooch, Donaghy, Declan. They're definite.
Yeah.
Galvin.
Yeah. Owen Brosnan.
Yeah.
And we're missing one, are we?
We're missing probably a left corner forward.
We've named five people. Maybe they're wrong, maybe they're right.
Brian Sheehan.
Brian Sheehan.
Lads. This would have won the All-Ireland. What might have been. I thought Owen Brosnan was the one that would have done his there, but no, Owen Brosnan started at left half forward.
That was good, but I never would have got Brosnan. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And the qualifier question, should you have had to go that route? In the last round of the All-Ireland qualifiers, Meath beat Galway 2-14 to 1-14. It would prove to be the last game in charge for which Galway manager? John O'Mahony, Peter Ford, or Joe Kernan?
2007. Jono was long gone.
Joe Kernan,
yeah.
Good job he's went the front door because he's wouldn't have been straight out in the qualifiers. It was Peter Ford. Joe Kernan, I think, would have been 2010 or 11. Liam Salmon managed in between. Ford
Sure, Jesus, he was Kernan barely gone from Armagh at that stage. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, we didn't have to think about it. There was no pressure on. I don't know. No. We were a Brian Farrell away from winning the All-Ireland there.
You never know, that there's was a sentence you didn't wake up this morning thinking that you're going to say. It's not even a sentence I thought we would have said because I started out making this quiz about the 1997 All-Ireland Championship, but it was so hard to find good questions on it that I changed. But anyway, lads,
we can head off and get our quiz club championship finished a little bit earlier this year.
Exactly. I will tell you what, lads, the actual 2007 All-Ireland Football Championship was a forgettable championship, I think, to be fair. But that was not a forgettable quiz. The 2007 quiz, I think, may have actually trumped it. So congratulations to that. That was a great run. Next week, we'll play a different year. Might be even a different code, we'll see. But PJ, Mick, thanks very much for joining me on the show. And thanks to everybody for listening. You can find us by searching The Build-Up on Balls.ie and all good podcast apps. And if you're a fan of GAA, we have plenty of GAA discussion earlier on in the show with Jason Quigley and Kevin Doyle when they talk through their favourite Irish sporting occasions ever. You can catch that earlier in the show. Like I said, be sure to subscribe and listen there. And you can also please rate and review the show if you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast apps. So until we chat to you next week, mind your friends.